For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, beginning the latest readout video from our Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter with a tribute to our viewers in San Diego, California, which, at number 32 on our all-time views list, edged out last week's San Jose, California, at 33rd. Not that it's a contest or anything, but by all means do try to outdo one another in views and in subscriptions. Do not, however, under any circumstances, attempt to outdo the authorities in Toronto, Canada, on fatuity. It recently rained heavily there, which apparently caught them off guard.
Water come from sky!
What's worse, water not absorbed by asphalt and cement, then poured onto roads and into basements, even cascading down the main stairway in iconic Union Station. The usual suspect said, "Told you so" about extreme weather. But actually, we told them so, because as we reminded them, we had explained the real situation back in 2019 in a video, Urban Flooding, It's Not About Climate, that specifically included the frequent flooding of Toronto's Don Valley Parkway, which, as the name suggests, is a big paved thing in what used to be a river valley. What could go wrong? In this context, it's telling that there has been an increase in summer flooding in Ontario in recent decades, but only in cities. In rural areas, it rains like it always did, and then it soaks into the ground, helping nurture crops, like it always did. But in cities, decades of reckless bad land management, also known as paving everything without making proper provision for runoff, has caused a problem that the people who caused it are now trying to blame on anyone but them. In the newsletter, we also noted that before they'd really gotten to wrecking their country, Britain's new Labour administration, which won a large parliamentary majority on July 4th based on a feeble popular vote, immediately set about wrecking their economy by aggressive and confusing attacks on its wobbly energy base. News stories promptly erupted about the government having cancelled, or not cancelled, or re-cancelled a project to drill for oil and a coal mine. And it's one thing to wage a consistent war on the essential bases of national prosperity, but quite another to wage an inconsistent one. So investors can't count on any particular disaster occurring, but they can be very sure that you'll manage one somehow and blindside them with it. Britain's famously once green and pleasant land is fairly small. It's just 244,376 square kilometres, or 94,354 square miles. And many Britons are concerned that the nation depends on its lush but limited countryside, both for food security and for culture. To forbid oil and gas drilling and coal mines with their small footprint and reliable output, and then fill the place with light satanic windmills and solar panels in an atmosphere of administrative chaos and eroding legislative authority, is asking for serious trouble. Especially since, as Telegraph columnist Neil Record pointed out, for all the ritual affirmation of net zero by Britain's political establishment, including the recently dramatically ousted Tory party, quote, "The UK emits less than 1% of global CO2 emissions, and forcing that down to zero will have an immaterial effect on global emissions," end quote. So, all that turmoil for nothing? Britons did not vote for such a thing. Hey there, just a quick reminder about subscriptions. We're this close to 100,000, so if you have already subscribed, thank you very much and enjoy the programs. If you haven't, click the button here, get us to 100,000 and beyond. And now, back to me. This week we also note a New York Times warning that, quote, "Home insurance rates in America are wildly distorted. Here's why. Climate change is driving rates higher, but not always in areas with the greatest risk," end quote. An assessment that relies on the notion that people who do risk for a living understand it less well than people who do gotcha and zealotry for a living. Oh, and then there was the dramatic appearance of some nasty industrial pollution on the beaches of Nantucket following the failure of, what dirty, obsolete form of energy? Why, wind turbines. The Boston Herald reports that, quote, "All beaches on the island reopened to swimming on Wednesday after lifeguards and workers removed truckloads of debris," end quote. Truckloads? Yes, and all from just part of one turbine blade, despite which the company's operations were entirely shut down. So, good thing these monstrosities aren't all over the place with people counting on them for power, isn't it? And by the way, bits kept falling off the blade, so this is a breaking story, including local authorities suing the company. Also, the law of unintended consequences strikes again. The New York Times warns of soaring metal theft, especially copper, saying, quote, "Metal theft has been an urban plague for decades. But the combination of the economic ills and social malaise lingering since the pandemic and soaring demand for metals, especially for copper, has brought the street crime to new levels," end quote. And then it finally blurts out that this dangerous and annoying phenomenon is linked to soaring demand because copper, quote, "is at the heart of the evolving economy, a key component of battery-powered cars, modern electrical grids, and the giant new data centers powering artificial intelligence and other technology," end quote. And, as the National Post reported, quote, "world would need 55% more copper mines to meet EV transition goals study," end quote. Oops. Didn't see that one coming, huh? In the newsletter, we also ask again, in genuine bafflement, how the usual suspects can keep saying things like the New York Times climate forwards, quote, "June was the Earth's 13th consecutive month to break a global heat record," end quote, when they have no thermometer readings for most of the world even a century back, and so many places are having normal or even cooler than normal temperatures. Does globe not mean what we think it means? And from the no-duh department, Scientific American somehow thinks it newsworthy that, quote, "geoengineering the climate could pose a new risk to the planet, UN fears," end quote. Speaking of which, we remind you that one significant problem with climate panic is that while forcing disastrous policies on vast swaths of humanity, it also diverts attention, effort, time, and money away from other real environmental problems. And, to strike a positive note, when the latter are taken seriously, miraculous results can occur. For instance, who, on the first Earth Day in 1970, would ever have believed that half a century later a headline would proclaim, quote, "Lake Erie has just been named the best lake in the U.S. and it's a diving hotspot. This great lake is tops in the nation, according to USA Today," end quote. But it did. Lake Erie, once famously, completely, totally, and permanently dead, is now a diving hotspot. That's what happens when we pay attention to real problems. And, also on the positive side, a new report from a net zero advisory body warns Canada's Trudeau administration that they'd better cut the denialism and start owning the huge cost of the green energy transition. Quote, "Net zero policy developments must consider the cost of living challenges facing many Canadians," end quote, it said. Oh dear, and you said we'd all effortlessly get rich. What was Plan B again? Gosh, seems there wasn't one. As BlockLock's reporter explained, po-faced, quote, "the panel did not elaborate, but promised recommendations by year's end," end quote. Also, this report comes from a 10-member panel, quote, "comprised of environmental advocates and academics appointed by Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault," end quote. So, not some nasty group of skeptics appointed by us, Donald Trump, David Koch, and Benny Pizer. So why is this a good news story? Because the silver lining here is that if the debate about climate policy takes into account that supposed remedies are costly, including by zealots who previously denied it, then things will get more sensible. Which admittedly, to quote Clint Eastwood's Jonathan Hemlock, doesn't limit the field much. So, here's a scary statistic from Canada's capital. Quote, "after 10 consecutive June days with minimum temperature over 14 degrees Celsius in Ottawa, the minimum temperature was only 12.8 degrees Celsius today. We made it to sixth place, only 9 days behind the record," end quote. And can you spot the hidden terror in a run of hot summer nights? Right. The notion that only 9 is a small number in a month that only has 30 days. We could also point out, since this statistic comes from the careful tabulator at Ottawa Weather Records, who always includes helpful tables of the various arcane records and semi-records that he unearths, fifth place, an 11-day run, came in 1949. Scared yet? Then how about a two-way tie for third at 12 days between pre-warming 1983 and practically pre-industrial 1876? Yes, that's the year Rutherford B. Hayes won a rigged American presidential election in which, for some reason, climate change was not an issue. Then second place is a solo 16-day or night stretch in 1894. the year Canada's first Roman Catholic Prime Minister, and first provincial premier to become Prime Minister, died into his lunch at Windsor Castle with Queen Victoria. That'd be John Sparrow David Thompson. They may have been discussing the weather when this regrettable incident occurred, but they were not discussing climate change. Finally, the actual record at 19 days came in 1998. And by the way, behind 2024 is a six-way tie at 9 days involving a stretch of years from 2023 all the way back to 1893. Not that 14 degrees Celsius is very hot anyway. For our American friends, it would be 57 degrees Fahrenheit, which is arguably blessed relief on a summer night. Meanwhile, speaking of the law of unintended consequences, NBC emails, quote, how California found itself with an unexpected surplus of clean energy that's now going to waste, end quote, and says, quote, as California works toward its ambitious clean energy vision, an almost counterintuitive challenge has emerged. The state is, at times, generating more solar energy than it can handle, end quote. But what could be more intuitive, in fact, if governments plunge recklessly into subsidizing forms of energy that are not efficient, including by producing power at the wrong time of day, than an expensive glut would develop? Have the journalists studied no more economics or engineering than the politicians? Apparently not. And perhaps it's because so many people share the grim opinion of eccentric Canadian Green MP Elizabeth May that, quote, baby boomers have, course banal expletive deleted, this planet, end quote. In response to which, we today begin a new series called Cheerful Charts, ranging beyond the dreary tunnel vision driving climate doomsters to drink, to look at real-world data on the state of our world today. The occasion for the Honourable Ms. May's channeling Barnacle Bill was learning that she has another grandchild due this fall, which ought to be delightful and happy news, but instead sent May into a tirade of anger and despair because climate change. But while we can't remedy every disordered step in her thinking, we can at least point out that due to the accomplishments of many people over the years, including her fellow boomers, that grandchild faces a very low risk of early death. Behold, cheerful chart number one, declining child mortality worldwide. And yes, it has plunged as fossil fuel use and atmospheric CO2 have risen. But of course, the current rate isn't the same everywhere. Instead, as you might expect, unless you're among those people thinking that prosperity is the worst thing ever to hit the human race, child mortality is lower in countries with higher income and energy use, and higher in countries with lower income and lower energy use, which is not a coincidence. The climate doomsters famously want to take us back to pre-industrial temperatures and CO2 levels. But doing so would also take us back to pre-industrial child mortality levels, which would really give the Elizabeth Mays of this world something to get upset about. Also in the newsletter, this week we conclude our series on climate scientist Patrick Brown's essay on the current state of climate science by confirming what CDN readers already knew. There's a powerful filter that operates from the journals down through the news media to ensure that the public only hears bad news about climate, and that the conclusion is always that we need more aggressive state intervention because otherwise we are all going to die. However, as we keep saying, people are logical, though slowly. And the longer this distorting process goes on, the less people trust this source of information. And that's more good news. And finally, more good news from the CO2science.org archive. In honor of summertime, which is a great opportunity to stop and smell the roses, we bring you the happy news that they will be bigger and more abundant as the planet gets more CO2. Various studies have found that adding 300 parts per million of CO2 to the air made Rosa hybrida gain about 26.5% in biomass, and 600 parts per million hiked it slightly more. So, when you stop and smell them, as they're now in bloom, breathe a little CO2 on them as well, and they will thank you with a display of bright color and sweet aromas. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know cement doesn't absorb water, and a rose garden does.